This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Wynton Marsalis grew up with jazz in his blood. His father, Ellis Marsalis Jr., is one of the premier pianists in modern jazz, and musicians were always around the house, talking in a language all their own about gigs and riffs, about who swung and who didn't. Over time and with study, that little boy learned how to listen and eventually how to play. Dozens of recordings and 9 Grammys later, Marsalis became the first jazz composer to win a Pulitzer Prize in music, but he never forgot how hard it can be even for the son of a jazz musician to understand America's great art form, the terminology and what it means, what makes the great ones great, and why the blues is a common language for musicians of all styles and ages, no matter where they're from. Jazz is universal, he argues, and rewards study. Great musicians, he writes, demonstrate a mutual respect and trust on the bandstand that can alter your outlook on the world and enrich every aspect of your life. We'll talk with Wynton Marsalis in just a moment. Later in the program, we'll find out more about what Hurricane Gustav visited upon areas outside of New Orleans and your letters. But first, we want to hear from those of you who find jazz forbidding or inaccessible. Are there terms or musicians or styles you don't understand? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Wynton Marsalis' new book is called Moving to Higher Ground, How Jazz Can Change Your Life. He joins us now from our bureau in New York, and nice to have you back on the program.
All right. It's always a pleasure.
And we talk about your book in just a minute, but the title could apply to the evacuations that took place over the weekend on the Gulf Coast. Many are breathing a sigh of relief today, but it must have, deja vu all over again.
Right. Well, we're all the New Orleans, all the New Orleanians everywhere, we're sorry for the people who suffered through the storm, but we're glad that our city didn't. We don't know if we could have survived another hit.
Yeah, it would have been very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a close call, man.
Of course, New Orleans, the city that gave birth to jazz, and it must have given birth to that age-old question and answer, what does swing mean? Well, if you have to ask, you'll never know.
Right, that's the kind of stuff that we have to fight, that we're trying to live down right now.
It makes it difficult to explain to people who find jazz, a concert form that they don't really understand.
Right, it's our principal art form, so it's important for us to take great pains to give people all the tools they need to figure out how to enjoy it. I make the argument all the time that even a football game has 3 analysts, 3 different people who will discuss the game from different perspectives, and it's important for us to take our art form seriously enough to give everyone the tools they need to enjoy it, because when you learn a few basic things, you can get a lot of enjoyment out of the music and a lot of information, knowledge, a great feeling, outlook on life, so many different things.
I'm sure it just flashed into the mind of many the great PDQ Bach moment, Peter Schickele's concert cast, where, oh, that was a beautiful solo. But I'm sure that's not what you're talking about. I wanted to point out in your book, you give us into that question, you know, what swings and what isn't. You give us some unusual examples of tunes that swing. For example, Frere Jacques and the Mickey Mouse Club March.
Right. The Mickey Mouse Frere Jacques is to show you what the bass does. Dong, dong, ding, dong, 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 ding, dong, playing on every note. The Mickey Mouse Club March, dit, 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 that's a rhythm called the shuffle rhythm. Ding, 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 ding. It's like the Washington Post March. And swinging is a combination of those two things. The bass going boom, 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 and the cymbal going ding, 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 ding. So when you put those two rhythms together, you have the swing rhythm.
And you argue that, for many years now, the drums and the bass have been arguing with each other.
Right. The drums are the loudest instrument, and the bass are the softest instrument. The drums, the cymbal of the drums is the highest pitch on the bandstand, and the low bass notes are the lowest pitch. For something to swing, the opposites have to be reconciled. So the loudest instrument is forced to come down to the volume of the softest, and the highest pitch plays on every beat with the lowest pitch. So they form like 2 pieces of bread on a sandwich, and the swing is everything that goes on between those two, the high and low frequency.
And the idea of self-sacrifice and altruism, this is embodied in the very idea of jazz.
Right, because the first teaching of jazz is that you have an individual sound, a voice, a personality that you prize above all else, the me, the I am. And you find things that you can do that no one else in the world can do, so people can identify your sound and identify your emotion and your feeling. Now, the second part is that you recognize that other people on the bandstand have that same thing. And you figure out how to find where they are in the time, how to communicate and connect with their ideas, how to listen to their improvisations while you create your own, how to not, you have a lot of choice. So a lot of the choices you will make will be great for you and bad for other people. So the music teaches you to enjoy your choice, but to temper your choices with knowledge that other people are participating.
These are just some of the things that Wynton Marsalis explains in his new book, Moving to Higher Ground, How Jazz Can Change Your Life. We'd like to hear today from those of you who do find jazz hard to understand, the terminology obtuse. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Asher. Asher with us from Reno in Nevada.
Hi, Wynton and Neil. I'm a classical pianist, amateur, and like a fanatic about it. And I've tried to access jazz. I've taken like a survey of jazz class of jazz in my college, my local university, but I've never really been able to like access it. I mean, I like all genres of classical music, maybe not 12 tone that much, but I'd like to know what avenue maybe I could take. I mean, there's a few things, like I like St. Thomas and maybe Take Five, but, you know, then my taste kind of, you know, my interest kind of wanes.
Well, okay, thank you for calling first. Second, first, you're naming songs. Okay, I would suggest that you get into artists. You're a pianist, so I'm going to give you a list of piano players that I want you to check out. And I think that first, of course, a pianist whose style borrows from the kind of romantic style of Chopin and Liszt would be Art Tatum. Get the Art Tatum solo piano masterpieces.
Did you say Art Tate?
Art Tatum.
T-A-T-U-M.
Like Neil, okay. Tatum O'Neill. Okay, Art
Correct.
Tatum.
Right, and you will certainly be impressed with his virtuosity, if nothing else. Okay, then I want you to go across to the other side of the field and get a man whose improvisations are incredible for their thematic, fundamental simplicity of his themes, but the complexity of the development of his solos. If you're a classical musician, you follow development. I know you love Beethoven, the Beethoven sonatas. Beethoven, of course, being one of the supreme masters of the development of a short theme. That's Thelonious Monk. I want you to get an album entitled Thelonious Monk Plays Duke Ellington.
Thelonious Monk playing Duke Ellington?
Right. So the name of the album on Riverside, Thelonious Monk Plays Duke Ellington.
All right.
Okay, so I want you to just start with those two albums. They represent two kind of extremes and ways of playing. Thelonious Monk will help you. He has an original technique, which is not at all like classical technique, but a thematic way of developing his solos. And the Duke Ellington material will be familiar songs, so it won't be that challenging to follow that. And then the Art Tatum has an unbelievable virtuosic technique.
Well, wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate your concern.
Hey, thank you very much.
Asher, thanks very much. Why is education so important to you, Wynton?
That's how we all experience life. I mean, education is our brain and our emotions and all of the spiritual aspects of us, they continue to develop where our physicality fails us. You can lose all of your physical skills and things that you can do, and you can continue to read and nourish. And if you can't read, you can continue to talk to people and learn. And there are many forms of education. Those of us who have children know you can learn from your kids.
Let's get Catherine on the line. Catherine with us from San Francisco.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. Mr. Marsalis, I cannot begin to tell you how much I value you. What you bring to the world is just amazing. I wanted to tell a story as briefly as I can about when I was 11 years old and I was in New Orleans for the first time, and I went to Preservation Hall with my parents. And I was floored. We were church-going people, and I had never felt God's presence as much as I did at Preservation Hall. And so one night, we went back. I had my parents take me back 3 nights in a row. I was an indulged child, I think. One night, I had the temerity to make a request, and it was a closer walk. And we didn't know about closer walk, just a closer walk with thee, except from singing it in church. And when I told my daddy what I had asked, he sort of grimaced. And he told me later that he thought he was worried because they had this really great set going. And then here, you know, they were going to play this hymn. And he was worried about the effect that it would have on the house. And I said, no, Daddy, I think it's going to be okay. So they started to play Closer Walk. It was slow, reverential, like in the hymnal. And then, man, it cut loose with this glorious exuberance that I still from the sound of my voice, I will never forget. And I see that shift happen so often, over and over and over again, in jazz performances. That shift, that spiritual shift, that makes its way into the secular beauty of the music as well. I just wanted to share that, and I also wanted to ask you briefly. We listen to jazz at home, but my daughter, who's 8 years old, I wonder if there's anything that you would really recommend that we share with her to enhance her love of jazz.
That's beautiful. First, that's a beautiful story.
It is, yeah.
And I like your use of the words glorious exuberance.
Thank you, sir.
You know, I love that it was just a closer walk with thee. That's one of the first songs I ever learned.
Oh.
And it's a beautiful story. In terms of your daughter and what she would listen to, I would suggest Louis Armstrong did a recording of Disney songs.
Oh, okay.
It's relatively late in his career. That's great. There's a book called Nicky the Cat that was done by Carol Friedman. That's great.
Okay.
And I also suggest Thelonious Solo Monk. Thelonious Monk playing solo piano. That's great for kids.
Oh, yeah.
Catherine, thanks for the call and for the exuberance.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Glorious exuberance.
Glorious exuberance. More with Wynton Marsalis in a moment. More of your calls, 800-989-8255. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Wynton Marsalis is our guest today, jazz trumpeter, composer, educator, and author. He's written a new book called Moving to Higher Ground, How Jazz Can Change Your Life. In it, he says he learned many of his most valuable lessons from the greats of jazz. With Louis Armstrong, he writes, you have the deepest human feeling and the highest level of musical sophistication. Great Louis Armstrong, West End Blues. And Wynton Marsalis, you dedicate an entire chapter in your book to the blues. Why is it so important, so central?
Because the blues is a form, it's a system of harmony, it's a body of superbly crafted melodies that we all know. It is a rhythm. It's related to a pentatonic scale of Eastern music. It encompasses the three basic fundamental chord structures of Western music. It uses all the near notes and melismas of Middle Eastern music. It has a perfect three-part structure and form. I could go on and on and on about that blues is call and response. There's more room in the blues for responding than there is for calling.
Hmm.
So it's the ultimate kind of democratic art form of I have said what I've said. Have to say, now let me listen to what all of you have to say, and how can all of us come together and be one?
You tell a wonderful story in your book about when you first moved to New York and thought of it as, well, you played the blues, but it was just the blues, and you went to a club called Mikel's on 97th Street.
Right. I played with Milt Jackson, and the older cats were playing a set, and I couldn't wait for them to call me up, and they called me up on the tune. Of course, I'm young. I want to play all fast. I had velocity and playing a lot of fast music. They called a slow blues. And of course, what did I do? Start trying to figure out how to play fast. I couldn't figure any approach that would work. Because when you start the sound bed, you're afraid to stop because you don't want to hear the silence. Because in that silence, you also hear what you played. So you have a tendency to just keep playing and keep playing. And when I finished playing, I knew I had played sad, but I circular breathed and I did some kind of tricks and fancy stuff. So people clapped. Milt Jackson came to me after that and he said, you notice the difference between how the music sounded before you came up there and how it sounded when you was up there? I said, yeah, I heard that. He said, you know what the difference was? I said, no, sir. He said, you wasn't up there.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. If there's parts of jazz you don't understand or need to learn about, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Rob's calling. Rob with us from South Bend in Indiana.
Wow. Finally cool to get through here. This is one of my all-time favorite radio shows.
Well, thank you.
You were talking about the blues, and that's a kind of a subject that really hits home for me. I actually am a drummer in a blues band, so I hang out with musicians.
Uh-huh.
You know, drummers hang out with musicians, as they say.
I heard you. We got it.
But you know, it was interesting. When I went to college, I studied some jazz, but I was kind of not interested. I was more of a rocker. I was into the progressive rock thing, and you know, I just didn't really get it. And then I got an opportunity to join a blues band, and one of the very first gigs is we had to open for Buddy Guy.
Wow.
And Carl Perkins was there as well. And we were backstage, and I was talking to Carl Perkins, and I play a little guitar, and I was trying to show him how good I was. And he goes, "Wow, that's great. I'm going to go home and forget about you." And I'm thinking to myself, wow, Carl Perkins is really a jerk, you know? And then he goes, no, wait a minute. And he showed me every note that I played, and I played the fastest ripping thing I could to impress him. And every note that I played in his head, he played back to me with feeling. And he said, music is the presence and the absence of sound. And if you're trying to tell someone something that's super important from your heart, you're not going to say it as fast as you physically can. You're going to emphasize the notes that really mean something.
That's
and
right.
It really got me back to going to basics, you know, as a drummer. I mean, the shuffle's like the, you know, one of the first patterns you learn.
Right.
And it's just completely changed my life musically. And turns out most of these blues guys are huge jazz fans as well. And most of them have pretty good jazz chops. And it's really changed my life musically.
Right. Well, that's a good story. And the story about the silence, too. I have a story that's like the story you just told. I gave a teacher of mine when I was in high school some music I had written, and he looked at the sheet, looked down on the sheet with the written music, and then he gave it right back to me and said, "This is sad." I said, "How do you know it's sad? You didn't even look at it." He said, "Son, all great music has rest in it." So,
true.
You know, it's kind of like the same story. And yet, the jazz and the blues are related. Everything comes from the blues. The blues is our root, the root of all of American folk music. And the blues cuts across all styles of our music. And if you're a drummer, you have to know that the jazz musicians invented the drum set. Jazz musicians right added the sock cymbal. Jazz musicians put the bass drum together with the snare drum. And the lineage of drummers in jazz reads like it's a lineage of kings, going back to Baby Dodds, Big Sid Catlett, on to Buddy Rich, Louis Belson, Sonny Greer, Papa Joe Jones, who taught everybody how to play the sock cymbal. Then we get to the modern kings like Max Roach, Elvin Jones, so on, Tony Williams, on and on and on. We've had a fantastic lineage of great drummers. And at one point, so many of the drummers were alive. The great Art Blakey, one of my first jobs when I was 18, was with him. So I had an opportunity to see all the drummers would come down and check him out. One night I was in a club with him, with Art, Buddy Rich, Max Roach, Papa Joe Jones, Charlie Persip, a whole room full of great drummers. I thought, man, this is unbelievable.
That would be amazing.
Kings of the drums.
I had the rare chance to talk with Elvin Jones a couple of times, and he spent a lot of time telling me why he thought Keith Moon was really, really such a good drummer.
Right.
Rob, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, guys.
So long. Let's see if we can get Valerie on the line. Valerie's calling us from Birmingham in Alabama.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
Hi. And Winton, I just want you to know I am the greatest fan of you now, especially you and Charles Mingus. And you two have really made me love anything dealing with horn right now.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I've been listening to jazz since I can remember. My mother's had me listening to it, I know, since I was like maybe 2 or 3 years old. And the one thing that I do love about jazz is that, to me, it's like water. It could get rough at times, get pretty rough at times, but when it's tapped just right, it's like it glides and it flows. And I hope this isn't kind of contradictory to my question. Now, I do, like I said, I do listen to it, and I love to listen to it. But what I would like to know is, what's the difference between the so-called contemporary jazz compared to the old school or the swing jazz?
Okay, the difference in what's known as contemporary jazz is the rhythm is different. Contemporary jazz is based on a backbeat. It's like around that central beat, which comes from our R&B, our rock music, it's called what we call a backbeat. Boom, bap, boom, bap, boom, bap, boom, boom, bap. Now, that beat comes from jazz. Jazz musicians used to play a shuffle. So what you do is you take the top rhythm off. And you make it straight. And you put whatever music around that. Now, the jazz is based on the swing rhythm, and the backbeat is not as pronounced most of the time. It's ding, 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 ding. When you pronounce a backbeat, when a backbeat is very pronounced, it interrupts the flow of the rhythm every two beats. Normally, that was used only at the climax of a piece of jazz. We just call it the backbeat. We call it chopping wood. Boom, bap, boom, ding, 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 ding. Sam Woodger, the great drummer with Duke Ellington, used to do that. But jazz is, the swing rhythm is designed to flow, like you said, like water. It goes up and down. It allows you to create these little stories and develop those stories as the rhythm flows with you.
It's dance music.
Right. But when you play on the backbeat, it roots the rhythm a lot more. It makes it a different type of dance, but it makes it less friendly to the up and down of improvisation. And that would be the basic difference between the two. I'm not going to get into the use of electronic instruments and all other different things because the instruments don't make that much of a difference. It's just the identity of the central rhythm is different.
Oh, okay. Because, see, I try to get into the contemporary. I do listen to some of it. But it's like it just does not, to me, have that kick or that flow.
Right.
That old school or that swing, and it, I guess when I listen to that rhythm, to that backbeat, that's what really gets me.
Right. The backbeat is more, in the contemporary jazz is mislabeled. It's actually instrumental pop music, which is you take the sound of just basic American pop music and play it on instruments.
Okay. Now, you know, I was kind of thinking pop music, and I'm like, I'm not really into pop music at all. But I have listened to some because some is pretty cool. But I knew it was something there. And, yeah, you helped me to make that connection. It is kind of popish. And
right, it's pop.
Like the flow.
Right. And but yeah. They're good. There's good music in every form of music. There's good pop music. You know, people are creative. So whatever form you find, you will find people who will be creative in that form.
Yeah. I'm also like an artist, too, or a self-proclaimed artist. But it's like, I guess the difference between who really likes abstract art and 3D art and this contemporary art and all that. I mean, I know art is a wide variety, a big form of everything, any kind of mixture, doesn't even matter. And I know it's pretty much like that with music also.
Right.
But I just knew that there was something not clicking with me for real, like I thought it should with the contemporary jazz. But right. I guess I better take a look or, you know, a deeper listen to it, but it still won't hit me like mine.
Well,
my old school or my swing.
Listen to the beat and you'll notice a big difference. And also, jazz is rooted in the blues. The contemporary pop expression is rooted in the style of church singing that came about after the 1960s,
yes,
which is more kind of theatrical. It has a more theatrical concern than getting deeper into the feeling of the blues.
Mm-hmm. Valerie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
So long. We're talking with Wynton Marsalis about his new book, Moving to Higher Ground, How Jazz Can Change Your Life. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from BK in Florida. I'm a professor at Florida A&M from the North, and I play jazz in my political science class and find it disturbing that our young African-American students are unaware of our own art form. I go to jazz festivals, Newport, Montreal, North Sea, and they lack any young people of color. What is happening?
Well, it's just a basic ignorance of the arts that affects our whole country. It affects Afro-Americans more probably than other segments of our population. But it's something that we need to work on as a nation, arts education in schools. It's not that the people don't like it. It's just you're not aware of it, and no one is taking the time to take you through the art form. Many times, the finer things and things that will teach you the most, you have to be taught. It requires. It's like we didn't learn how to read without tremendous assistance, and our involvement with things like an art form requires some type of education.
Let's talk with Holly. Holly with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having Wynton Marsalis on your show. And Mr. Marsalis, I wanted to let you know, my father grew up in Indianapolis in the 50s, and he would visit a jazz club, a very tiny jazz club in the black community when that city was segregated. He was white, and he was told many times that it was odd for him to go there, but he didn't care, and that's part of the thing I love about my dad. But he played clarinet and loved jazz. And I'm really nervous.
Oh, go ahead. You're doing fine, Holly.
He watched Wes Montgomery play as a new musician. He was very young, and they were kind of peers at the time. And my dad became friends with him, not long-term friends, but more of a, you know, he knew him when he went there, and Wes always, you know, nodded to him, and always they had drinks together. But my dad always pined about how great Montgomery was. And sadly, my dad died.
Yeah, so go ahead and get full. It's all right.
He died about 2 years ago. Well, we put a memorial together for him, and every album from Wes Montgomery was in there. And I'm sad because I didn't learn about him. So if you could just tell us why Wes Montgomery was so great, I would be so thankful. And I'll take your response off the air. Thanks again.
Holly, thanks so much for the call.
First, I want to tell you that you shouldn't feel bad about whatever you did when your father was alive. I have sons and kids, and they're not really deeply into the music, but I don't love them because they love what I love, and I know that they will get to the music eventually, and they know how important it is to me. And there's so many things he taught you that he got from this music that he put in you, the type of humanity that's coming out when you're talking to us right now on the air, that you could get full and express that type of emotion. And go through what you're saying. Your father, I'm sure he understood that, because jazz music teaches us all to accept people where they are and have a love for what they can do, not for what they don't do. The thing that made Wes Montgomery so great is what makes all the musicians great: the feeling for the blues, the humanity, the sense of rhythm, the precision of his lines, and just the feeling that he would give to your father. That's what he appreciated: the attention to detail, things that make for first-class artistry in any form.
Well, you think of Wes Montgomery and you say, wait a minute, this sounds like a lot of other guitar players I've heard since, George Benson, a lot of people like that. And the fact is, Wes Montgomery changed the way that instrument sounded. A lot of people since him play it like Wes Montgomery.
Right. Charlie Christian. Wes is coming out of Charlie Christian, who, of course, was a great contemporary, played with Benny Goodman, Charlie Parker. Everybody loved Charlie Christian. And then here comes Wes. He played with a tremendous eloquence and a poetic. He had a poetic style. His lines, just he knew how to, it's like a great poet. He balances the lines out, and they're so beautiful and lyrical that George Benson and all other guitarists couldn't help but be influenced by it. And it always had a great feeling to the rhythm. So it's always that combination of kind of attention to detail and the sophistication, and also that down-home type of earthy, basic feeling that undergirds all of life.
If you'd like to find out more about what makes the great jazz musicians great, Jelly Roll Morton and Charlie Parker and, well, we've talked about Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk, well, pick up the new book by Wynton Marsalis, Moving to Higher Ground, How Jazz Can Change Your Life. Wynton Marsalis joined us today from our bureau in New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
All right.
Coming up, the levees held in New Orleans, so the winds and flooding from Hurricane Gustav caused extensive damage along the Gulf Coast. If you lived in the path of Gustav, how did you weather the storm? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.